It's half past 8.
It's 8:30, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike supplies you with 4 experts for you to match your wits against. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And I'll light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, whose new book, Reading I've Liked, comes out on Monday, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the very start, as you know, Information Please has been a completely unrehearsed and spontaneous program, and that's the way it will continue. Tonight, the spontaneity will be supplied by our two anchormen, the sports expert and naturalist John Kieran, and the conning tower and poetry man, Franklin P. Adams. And further spontaneity will come from our two guests. First, our old friend Jan Struther, author of Mrs. Miniver and other books, and secondly, the world-famous conductor and musician, Sir Thomas Beecham. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from Mary Goodrich of Washington, D.C. I want you to get 2 parts out of 3 on this. Can you name the ruler who gained political power by crossing a river? Gained political power by crossing a river. Mr. Kieran.
Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar. And the river was named?
Rubicon.
The Rubicon, yes. The famous crossing of the Rubicon. Who became king by having his 2 nephews strangled? It was easier in those days.
Richard
Sir Thomas?
III.
I beg your pardon?
Richard III.
Richard III is quite right. And who were the 2 nephews? One hardly remembers them, I suppose.
Edward V. Edward V and his brother.
Yes, Richard, I think his name was, his brother's name. Who became an empress by having her husband, what shall we say, liquidated? Sir Thomas?
Well, a great many.
Your acquaintance is larger than mine, Sir Thomas. I think of one very famous
Catherine.
One. Which one?
Catherine of Russia.
Catherine of Russia, yes, Catherine the Great. Well, that was a very easy question, just to give our distinguished guests a little confidence, which I don't think they need. Here's one from Marion Schwitzer of New York City. Get 2 out of 3. Now, we're going to hear in an important work. What is the work, and who is the composer? Shall we have the first?
Gaudia musicitur, iubes dum sumus.
Now, that is used where?
Academic Overture of Brahms.
The Academic Festival Overture of Brahms. That's quite right, Sir Thomas. This, of course, is too elementary, I suppose, even to interest you, Sir Thomas. We're just doing the best we can. Maybe we'll get harder. Let's have the second. Sir Thomas?
Boris Godunov.
Boris Godunov, that is right. It's a. Does the song have a name, Sir Thomas, do you know?
It's a chorus.
A chorus of a folk song.
Yes.
Now the third.
Something the world has made for all and truly, and so do I.
I think most of us know the song, but perhaps not all of us know in what other work it appears. Any guesses from some other than Sir Thomas?
It appears in...
Sir Thomas?
It appears in a symphonic work of Richard Strauss.
Yes. So what's it called, Sir Thomas?
Italian
Funiculi.
Symphony. Italians?
That's the name of the song itself. Aus Italien, yes. Yeah. That's right. And is it a folk song, Sir Thomas? Or
no.
Is it...
It's a composition of Densa.
Of Densa.
An imitation of a Neapolitan folk song.
It sounds like the real thing.
Very much.
Very near enough to it.
It's much better than the real thing.
This one comes from Miss Leslie Baldwin of Newark, and it's about well-known illustrators of famous books. Again, get 2 out of 3. Who is the best-known illustrator, for example, of Alice in Wonderland? Mr. Kieran.
Tenniel.
Who is the best-known illustrator of Dante's Inferno?
Mr. Adams.
Probably Dore.
Dore is quite right, Mr. Adams. First name?
Gustav.
Yes, just call him Gus. And who is the best-known illustrator of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or David Copperfield, which is one book?
By Robert Bentley.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams. And who is the illustrator of it?
Elias Williams.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Thank you very much. Did you know that, Sir Thomas?
No, I was...
Well, I'm very glad it's something you don't know.
I should have guessed wrong.
Here's one from Francis Wheelock of New Haven. It's a question on etymology. Why are these rooms so called? Get two out of three. Why is the parlor called the parlor? Miss Struther.
Place you went to talk in.
From what word?
Parler.
Yes. From the French parloir, from parler, to speak. That's quite right. And the word pantry comes from what word? Pantry, Mr. Kieran?
Comes from the word meaning bread in Latin.
That's quite right. Latin panis, place for bread,
right,
or provisions in general. And how about the drawing room? The drawing room, Miss Struther?
It's the place that the ladies withdrew to when the gentlemen had had too much to drink.
Yes, or even...
That's the withdrawing room.
It was called the withdrawing
room.
True.
Originally. And also when the ladies hadn't had enough.
Here's one from Mrs. Elsa M. Roth of this city. Get two out of three if you can. Complete these bits of advice. They're all quotations that should be fairly familiar. Be good, sweet maid, and let who will be clever. How does it go on? Mr. Kieran?
Do good things. Don't dream them all day long, and so make life, death, and that best forever one grand sweet song. That's... There's a first verse
you know
to that,
thing,
by the way, that nobody seems to know.
There's a first what?
First verse.
What is the first verse?
My child, I have one gift.
My dearest child, I have no song to give you. No lark could pipe through skies so dull and gray. Yet ere we part, one lesson I might give thee for every day.
Is that right,
I
Sir
might
Thomas?
Leave thee for every day.
Yes. There's a funny thing about that line, Mr. Kieran. Perhaps you can clear it up for me. In some versions, it's be good, sweet maid, and let who can be clever, which is puts an entirely different significance on it.
I'd rather have will.
I'd rather have can. Here's the second bit of advice, which I want you to complete if you can. So live that when thy summons comes to join... I have Mr. Adams.
Thou go not like the galley slave at night, scourged to his dungeon.
That's dandy. You've skipped a couple of lines, but that's the general idea.
I did that on purpose, for the advice.
That's quite right.
Asked for the advice, I gave it.
You have me there, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran, can you fill out the non-advice line?
So live that when thy summons comes to join the innumerable caravan that moves to that mysterious realm where each shall take his chambers in the silent halls of death.
And then Mr. Adams comes
I'll in. I'll go not, and so forth.
That's right. And Mr. Adams, the lines are from what poem?
Fan of W. Topsis.
Good enough. Now, how about this one? You must lie upon the daisies and discourse in novel phrases. Sir Thomas.
Of your complicated state of mind.
Yes. How does it go on? Do you know, Sir Thomas?
It doesn't matter if it's only idle chatter of a transcendental kind.
Thank you, Sir Thomas. And you're quoting from what?
Patience.
You're quoting from Patience by W.S. Gilbert. That's quite right. I assume that you also pay some attention to your music from time to time, Sir Thomas. Here's one from Mrs. Don Trumpy of Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Now, this is a rather complicated one. I think it's more or less up the alley of Sir Thomas. If he has one alley, I imagine he has many. We're going to hear some prominent brass passages of several different compositions, three, as a matter of fact. Now, aside from the interpretation, which may be a matter of opinion, what we'd like to know is how our rendition differs from what is called for by the composer. This is really a technical question that I imagine is pretty much for a conductor to answer, but Miss Struther, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, if you'd like to come in on this, we'd be very happy to have you make mistakes. Now, we'll have the first brass passage. What is wrong with it? How should it be given? And as I understand it, we are going to have a special guest conductor here this evening in the person of Mr. Oscar Levant. This will be the only time in the history of this program that Mr. Levant will appear on it and say nothing.
Harpo Levant.
Harpo Levant is right. All right. Sir Thomas.
Heldenleben.
Helden Laban is right. And what is wrong with the way in which our rendition is done?
Everything.
Well, Sir Thomas, we might call that an all-out answer. But specifically, if you were conducting it, what simple change would you make?
A few changes in the notes.
I believe our notes are supposed to be all right. The notes are considered to be...
Well, a supposition is not a conviction.
You see nothing
they might
wrong.
Do it again.
Oh, no. The what is wrong is obvious. It leaps to the eye. Two trumpets are heard. Now, in
there
the...
There should be three.
There should be three. But did I not deposit that in your lap, Sir Thomas, as it were?
Yes, you did, yes.
Then I shall... I'm sure you knew it, but I shall count you wrong just to give myself a little satisfaction this evening.
Bravo.
And we'll now have the second of these brass passages. Now, in this case, we have only one instrument playing. Would you like to conduct that, too, Mr. Levant?
No.
This may be an extremely difficult question. I am no judge of it. In the first place, do you recognize the composition, Sir Thomas?
I recognize something that sounds like it.
Well, if you were forced to hazard a guess, it would be from what composer?
Brahms.
No, unless I'm misinformed. Would that not be Sibelius? I think it would be.
Well, it's a very ordinary phrase, if I may say so.
Oh, well, Sibelius may write ordinary phrases as well as Brahms.
They both wrote too many ordinary phrases.
Well, you're safe in making the criticism.
That is come from the Seventh Symphony.
That's quite right, Sir Thomas, from the Seventh Symphony of Sibelius. And did you detect anything wrong with the way in which the trombone played the notes?
Well, I could if he played it again.
All right, we'll have it done for you.
Should start on a G instead of a C.
It's played higher than it's written.
Yes.
That's quite right. Playing in the tenor clef instead of the bass clef. That may seem miraculous to a lot of people, including myself. Mr. Kieran, does it seem so to you?
Floyd me.
Well, that's
black
certainly.
Art.
Black art. And now the third of the brass passages. Mr. Levant is raising his baton. He has just stopped raising it. Go ahead. Sir Thomas?
Fate, Debussy.
That's quite right.
Played on three trumpets.
Should be what?
Three trumpets.
Should be three, rather. Three. Or should it be two?
Three trumpets. I think they've got a trombone and a trumpet.
There. Yes, instead of the two trumpets as called for. And are the instruments being played in any way that they should not be played in?
They should be muted.
They should be muted instead of open. Mm. Well, you haven't got where you are for no reason. For time. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out no dollars and no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica, thanks largely to Sir Thomas. And now Mr. Cross points out that though auctions may come and auctions may go, one thing remains unchanging.
Well, this year and every year, Lucky Strike never forgets, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. That's why we consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. For example, last season at the important tobacco market of Live Oak, Florida, the American Tobacco Company paid 37% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. And this season at that same market of Live Oak, American paid 40% more. Yes, 40% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. And, ladies and gentlemen, so it goes year after year at market after market. That's why Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, doesn't that put the next move squarely up to the smokers themselves?
I think it does, Mr. Cross, and without any waste of time. I clocked you at just 55 seconds. We'll go on now with the second half of the program with a question from Philip C. Gifford of Providence, Rhode Island. I think I'll ask you to get all on this, Mr. Other and gentlemen. What languages would these characters of Shakespeare speak today if they were still living in the countries where we find them. For example, Othello today would speak what language?
Italian.
Italian, yes. Now, what language would Touchstone speak today? Touchstone, Mr. Kieran.
He would speak Saxon.
Saxon? In what country would you find him?
England.
Would you?
In As You Like It?
In As You Like It? What is the scene of As You Like It?
Forest of Arden.
And where is Arden?
Well, Warwickshire.
In Warwickshire?
Yeah.
Miss Struther?
There's one in Vermont as well.
And is there... Now, I may be wrong about this, but I always thought that by the Forest of Arden, Shakespeare meant what
Arden,
we now call the Ardennes.
I doubt it.
And that the characters are meant to be French. Do you think so, Mr. Kieran?
I wouldn't think so offhand.
I've heard that too, Nyman.
I believe that they are meant to be French, and if you look up the dramatis personae, you'll find that many of the names are French, not including. So the Touchstone would speak French today. What language would she speak if she were living today? Mr. Adams.
British.
I beg pardon?
British.
You make a
great distinction. English is derived from the word angle. The Angles didn't come until long after Cordelia lived and died.
Ah, well,
England,
All we meant was that if she were alive today in 1941, she would be speaking the language that we all speak, more or less, to wit, English. How about Bottom? Bottom would speak what language today? Bottom? Mr. Kieran?
Uh-huh. He would speak Greek.
He would speak Greek, yes.
Cockney.
Very peculiar it would sound, too. Because the Midsummer Night's Dream is laid in what city, Mr. Kieran?
Athens
and its and Byron's suburbs, quite right. This one comes from Dorothy McDougall of Montreal, Quebec. Now, Queen Victoria had 7 grandchildren who were crowned. That is, they became emperor or empress or king or queen. 7 of them altogether. Can you name 5 for me, at least? And you can work together on this. Mr. Adams.
King Edward.
I beg pardon?
King Edward of England.
No, these would be grandchildren. Now, King Edward of England would not be a grandchild, but a what?
King George. George the Fifth.
George the Fifth would be one. That would be quite right, Mr. Adams. Now we have to name 4 more grandchildren. Miss Struther.
William
the Second of Germany, yes, recently deceased. That would be quite right. That would give us 2. 2 grandchildren who were at one time crowned. Miss Struther.
Sir Elizabeth of Russia.
No, but you're rather near to it.
Cousin,
I beg pardon?
He was a first cousin, wasn't he?
Yes, he was related, but I don't think a grandchild...
His wife, I believe.
Yes, that's right. The Empress... What was the Empress called? Of Russia. The Empress Alexandra of Russia. Now we have to get 2 more. Mr. Kieran.
I think there was one that married in Greece.
Keep going.
You mean whoever had been a ruler of England?
No. Had been a ruler in his
king
or her
of
own
Greece.
Country.
There's another grandchild married the king of Greece.
Yes.
I don't remember what her name was.
Her name was Queen Sophie. Queen Sophie of Greece. Mr. Adams? That gives us
the
3.
The present Duke of Windsor.
No, is not a grandchild. I wouldn't think of Queen Victoria.
Great
well, there are others.
The reigning king is...
He's also a great-grandson.
A great-grandchild. Well, I think we shall lose...
Queen of Spain.
I beg pardon?
The Queen of Spain.
The Queen of Spain. Thank you. That's right. That gives us our 5, I think. Queen what? Queen made several errors. Dollars. And a set of the encyclopedia to Miss McDougall. And read the whole list of the grandchildren. Emperor Wilhelm II, Queen Sophie of Greece, Queen Maud of Norway, King George V of England, Empress Alexandra of Russia, Queen Marie of Romania, and Queen Victoria of Spain. I might also say that I neglected to ring up $25 for Mr. Gifford. We would get 3 out of 3 on that Forest of Arden question. That sends $25 and a set of the Britannica to Mr. Gifford. Now, how about this one? Here's one from Juliet G. Bradshaw of Nutley, New Jersey. Get 3 out of 4 on this one. According to familiar poetry or prose, what are these superlatives in literature? The first superlative is loveliest of trees. Mr. Adams.
The cherry now.
What are you quoting from?
Houseman.
Loveliest of trees, the cherry now. Remember how it goes, Mr. Adams? Mr. Kieran, Miss Struther?
No.
Is hung with bloom along the bough and stands about the woodland ride wearing white for Eastertide. Now, how about the worst of times? The worst of times. Does that ring a bell? It's a quotation.
We are fallen upon. The worst of times.
What's it from, Mr. Adams? It's true enough. I don't know whether that's a real quotation or whether you've just made it up.
I made it up.
Well, that's very good.
How am I doing?
You're doing very well. You are now, according to my card, part of familiar poetry or prose. The worst of times, I think, opens A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Dickens is describing France before the French Revolution, in the mid-70s. Does that come back to any of you now from your school reading? That gives us one wrong. Now, how about The Weariest River? Miss Strother.
Wind somewhere safe to see.
Yes. In what poem does the river do that?
I knew you.
Sir Thomas?
The Garden of Proserpine.
By whom, Sir Thomas?
Swinburne.
Yes. Could you give us any other lines that would include the one that Miss Strother has just quoted for us?
Yes.
Go ahead.
From too much love of living, from hope and fear set free, we thank with brief thanksgiving whatever gods may be. That no life lives forever. A dead man rise up never. Even the weariest river winds somewhere safe to see.
Thank you. Mr. Kieran, would you like to admit to Thomas to your special club? Apparently, Mr. Kieran and Sir Thomas read the same books. Here is a final superlative. The dearest girl in the world. The dearest girl in the world. Now, where would you find that phrase? Mr. Adams.
That's what people say to bartenders about their wives.
That's quite true, and almost never to their wives. That, however, would not... I wouldn't call that familiar poetry or prose. Yes, I suppose it would be familiar to some of us.
Oh, that is familiar.
Boy, that's familiar.
What specific author, however, used the phrase, the dearest girl in the world? It's a rather hard one. In David Copperfield, there's a character who draws skeletons on a slate, as I remember it. Do you remember, Sir Thomas, the name of the boy? Tommy Traddles. And he refers to his girlfriend, Sophie Crewler, as the dearest girl in the world. You remember that now, Sir Thomas?
Yes.
It's shameful for us not to remember it, isn't it? That gives us 2 out of 4 and sends $25 instead of the Britannica to Miss Bradshaw. How about this one? This, I think, is, again, more or less up Sir Thomas's alley. This is from L. Glenn Stires of Dunellen, New Jersey. We want to get 2 out of 3 on this. We're going to hear 3 harp cadenzas. All I ask you to do is to identify them. I don't see why the rest of us can't come in on this. Let's have the first. Does that strike a familiar chord, so to speak? Sir Thomas, did you recognize it?
Yes, I can't remember for the moment where it comes from.
You did recognize that,
yes.
But don't remember where it comes from. Mm-hmm. It's from the Overture to Mignon.
Oh.
Does it come back to you now?
Very, very vaguely. I've not heard it for a long time.
Yes, well, now you've heard it very recently. Now the next time you'll unquestionably do better on it. That gives us one wrong. Let's have the next of the cadenzas, please. I should be at a complete loss, and I imagine many of the people in the studio audience would be.
Mighty pretty.
Yes, it is good. Any idea at all where it comes from? It's from the fourth movement of Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Espagnol. And I don't see how anyone could be expected to get these just from the few notes that are given to us. But shall we try another one, Sir Thomas, just for fun?
Oh, yes.
All right, let's have the next. One hand, Mr. Kieran.
I'll take a chance on it. Is that Tchaikovsky?
That's right.
That's in the Nutcracker suite.
That's right, Mr. Kieran.
Oh, well.
I I think you've taken your revenge on Sir Thomas's garden of proserpine. That's very good. Thank you. That, however, will send $25 and a Britannica to Mr. Stiers for a very good and, I may say, a very difficult question. Very How about good. This one? Did you think it was difficult, Sir Thomas? Hmm? Did you think it was a difficult question?
I do, yes.
Yes, I think it is. Yeah. It gets more difficult the more I think of it. Yeah. How about this one? Here's from one from Lorraine Byberg of Los Angeles. Each of these sisters belongs to a famous sister act. Complete the pair. The first is Eileen. Who's the other sister? Eileen? Ruth. Then.
Ruth McKinney.
That's right, Ruth McKinney. Now, how about Sophia? Sophia. Mr. Adams?
That might be somebody in the old wives' tale.
It is indeed. Constance. Nope. Constance is the name. And how about Clotho? C-L-O-T-H-O. Mr. Kieran.
Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos.
The yes, three, who are these people?
Three fates.
The three fates. That's quite right. Well, that gives us two out of three. And now Mr. Cross tells us of an encounter he had recently with a rugged individualist, wasn't he, Mr. Cross?
Yes, of sorts, Mr. Fadiman. You see, he told me frankly that he wasn't really interested in the subject of tobacco. He said he just wanted a milder, better-tasting cigarette, and that was that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's what I pointed out to him. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Fine tobacco is what gives you all those qualities you want as a smoker. Luckies are milder and better tasting because the American Tobacco Company consistently pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. For example, last season at auctions in Greensburg, Kentucky, American paid 22% more than the market average. At Morristown, Tennessee, 33% more. And so on at market after market. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. This is a statement of fact which you can prove to yourself. Make your next package Lucky's and enjoy a milder, better-tasting smoke.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $100 and four sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Sir Thomas and Miss Struther, for adding your English wit and charm to our little party tonight. Next week, the Kieran Adams Levant trio will be reinforced as the public will be focused this part in the World Series, the star pitcher of the New York Yankees, Lefty Gomez. Next week on this show, he'll be catching him, not pitching him. Vernon, yes. Vernon Lefty Gomez.